Hello, my name is Dario Balca, and you're listening to the Allard School of Law Oral History Project. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that UBC's Vancouver Point Grey campus is situated on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. I'd also like to encourage those listening to this interview from outside of this area to acknowledge the traditional owners and caretakers of those lands. It's July 17th, 2020, and I'm joined today by Nico Bautista and Maria Kim Bautista. Nico and Maria both graduated from the Allard School of Law in 2013 and have both gone on to successful careers as in-house counsel at BMO and Population Data BC, respectively. They are also behind the Kim Bautista Award in Law. Each year, the award provides financial assistance to students of color in the JD program, but as we'll soon hear from Nico and Maria, it also represents so much more. Nico and Maria, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
I wanted to start by asking you about, kind of started from the beginning of your story here, and I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about your lives before law school and what inspired you to pursue a career in law.
So I was born in Korea and my family immigrated to Canada when I was in grade 8. And after seeing how fellow immigrant families were having a tough time transitioning to the life in Canada and navigating through the new system, I wanted to be a lawyer to somehow, I don't know how back then, but somehow help the immigrant community. So during my undergrad at UBC, I was quite involved with Access Pro Bono, which I don't know if you're aware, but a not-for-profit organization that provides legal aid to people with limited means. So I volunteered as a community advocate and liaison for a few years, and that experience really solidified my commitment to pursue law. And I did a double major in honors in sociology and Asian studies, focusing on Japanese language. So lots of reading and writing that prepared me for law school. So that's my experience.
Great. And so my name is Nico Bautista. I was born in the Philippines, raised in Richmond. I went to Vancouver College for elementary and high school. I went to Corpus Christi College, which is actually just behind Allard, for the first year of undergrad, and also a little bit of my second year before transferring to UBC Arts full time. I did the political science honors program there. And in our class of nine, actually two other people, Tyson Grattan and Kate Addison, joined me at Allard the same year. So that was kind of nice. I wish I could say, like Maria, I've always wanted to be a lawyer, but the alternate reality is that I've just always wanted to be a pro basketball player. Don't have the skills for that. But after graduating with an arts degree, I did the responsible agent thing and tried to make that arts degree turn into something somewhat profitable, something that would kind of be able to support the family and maybe even bring some honor to it. And so that's where my background is from.
Yeah. So Nico, you mentioned you grew up in the Vancouver area and went to school here. Yeah. So obviously I'm sure there's a convenience element about going to Allard, but was there anything else that drew you to that law school in particular?
I actually wasn't sure if I was going to go into law school. Coming out of the poli-sci program at UBC, the honors program, it was pretty grad school focused. So I wasn't sure if I wanted to do grad school or law school. So I applied to both programs or to a few programs, and actually UBC had a joint program with law and the Masters of Arts in Asian Policy Studies. It's now called the Masters of Public Policy through the School of Global Public Policy and Public Affairs. So I got two birds in one stone. And to your point, Dario, the fact that it was in Vancouver was a bonus because it meant I could live from home and minimize the cost of the degree.
And I went to do my first year of law at the cold Edmonton University of Alberta, and I transferred in my second year. So yes, so we'll talk about that, I think, more later.
Sure, yeah. But I know you guys met in law school. If you're comfortable, can you tell me a bit about the circumstances under which that happened? I think that's kind of a unique part of your story.
How we met, okay. So it actually, a lot of people like think that we met in law school, but we actually met in undergrad.
Okay.
So we met in undergrad at UBC. Nico and I were both part of a UBC leadership program called the UBC Peer Programs. Nico was part of the Faculty of Arts Commuter Transition Program, which I think is for students who are commuting from like different places, White Rock, Richmond, Surrey, and the transition, helping the students transition that process. And me, having just come back from a one-year exchange program in Japan, I was a global ambassador. So in September 2009, there was a leadership retreat that brought together different groups of peer program leaders, and we met on a bus on the way to Whistler.
We didn't really have much contact after that. She was actually dating someone else at the time, so I stayed steering clear from that. Maria, we both graduated from undergrad at UBC. Fast forward a year, she goes to Alberta for her first year of law school. Hear nothing from her. Nothing, not even keeping in touch in any way. But suddenly, you know, summer of 2011, get a Facebook message from her saying she's thinking about coming back to Allard. Or in fact, I think she said she was transferring back to Allard, and that's where we kind of reconnected.
Yeah. And I remember having a bit worried about how I would fit in as a 2L transfer student because, you know, everybody is already in their small groups from 1L. Then I remembered, oh, wait, I know a guy who goes to Allard. His name was like Nico Bautista, so I better reach out to him. So I reached out to him and asked him about the school and courses. And I remember him saying, oh, don't worry, Maria, you'll fit right in. I'll introduce you to all of my friends and I'll take care of you. So I didn't know he had an ulterior motive back then.
Kind of to your point, the law school starting from 1L is a pretty meaningful experience for people. People form really close friendships and connections. Are there any other kind of lasting memories from your time at Allard that you can tell me about?
So actually on our wedding slideshow, there is a photo of us running down Robin Street in our UBC 2012 Law Games uniform, which if you've never seen is a golden tracksuit.
Top and bottom.
Top and bottom. It's quite the sight. We remain close friends with a lot of our small group friends who we met on our first few days of law school, and also the friends that we made doing a lot of volunteer activities.
Yeah, I basically took over his small group friends. I took it pretty literally that he's going to share his friend. No, I took it over. But I do remember fondly like studying at our nice law library with the Vista of the Ocean, and we made a lot of stake bets on the courses that we took together. So the winner of the higher exam score will buy the stake for the loser.
In terms of the more academic side of your law school experience, were there any courses or any experiences in particular that really inspired the direction that you would take afterwards?
So to be completely honest, there was no one course that really influenced the direction of my career. I really took a wide variety of courses, like anything I wanted, from Aboriginal employment, women law and social change. That was a really good course. Intercultural dispute resolution, those courses, and they all really helped shape my perspective in the legal profession. So I can't really pinpoint that one course.
For me, I thought I was going to be an oil and gas lawyer. I didn't end up becoming one. We can get into that. But in terms of what course really applies to my day-to-day now, it had to be trust law with Professor Pavlich.
Can you describe actually the paths that your careers took after you graduated law school? Nico, I know you were at Fasken for a little while before BMO, and Maria, you were at Young Anderson before returning to UBC.
So I started my articles and practice for a few years at a boutique municipal law firm, Young Anderson, and which was a really great place to start my career, as it introduced me to a wide variety of practice areas. They do like a lot of things for local governments. So doing that work, it ultimately unlocked my interests and passion in privacy law, which funnily enough, like I wasn't exposed to at all in law school because there's no privacy law course. And that led me to my current position at Population Data BC, which is a secure data research facility at UBC, and I'm currently working as their privacy and governance lawyer. So I tell all my student mentees just to stay open-minded about where their career takes them and don't fret about the specific courses they're taking now, because I knew nothing about privacy law and I like certainly didn't think that I would become a privacy lawyer.
Yeah, and I guess on that train, I never thought I'd be a wealth management lawyer. I always thought I'd be an oil and gas lawyer. That was because my master's thesis was on liquid natural gas pricing. And so this took me to stints at national law firms, Shern Delamore in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, just before law school. Did a semester exchange at the University of Manchester in UK, and I thought about maybe starting my legal career there. But then I ultimately had the chance to go through the recruiting process through Allard, did the traditional big law course. So summered at Fasken at the end of my second year of law school. But at the end of the third year, I had to finish off my master's. And so I ended up doing a stint at the national law firm of Allen & Gledhill in Singapore. And that was fantastic. When that was all done, all the schooling was finished, I articled at Fasken where the energy market tanked for liquid natural gas. And so, you know, with a couple months left in my articles, they actually told me I had no job in the energy department.
Which was quite shocking. It was very out of the blue.
You know, you travel across the world and you find out that, you know, there just wasn't an opportunity. But luckily, I lived up to the Asian stereotype of being good with math. And so tax and trust were my best classes in law school. And then working in Singapore and Malaysia, which is, you know, the scene of Crazy Rich Asians, the movie, and the home of preferential tax laws, it really exposed me to this different world of what we call estate or wealth management law. So tax, trusts, wills and estates, family law and charity, anything to do with families and their wealth. And then I was really thankful that the estate team at Fasken took a chance on me with about 1 month left of my articles to hire me as their associate. And it turned out to be an absolute privilege to junior with some of the best lawyers in that field in Canada. I'll name them because I owe a lot to them. There's Helen Lowe QC, there's Edgar Frechette, Anna Lang, and Daryl Wickstrom. And then I left in 2018 to join my wife as part of the cool kids who are in-house lawyers. and that would be at BMO Wealth Management, where I now practice.
You've become involved with the school through the Kim Bautista Award in Law. In your own words, can you tell me what the award is and who it seeks to help and what it's all about?
Okay. We'll try. There are a lot of, I guess, values and emotions that we had in making this award. But we personally see this award as us doing our part in clearly signaling to students of color who may be uncertain if they're worthy of being lawyers because no one else in their family has ever proven so, that they do indeed belong here at Allard. And that this award specifically signals that there's a place for people like us. And then as a student who has been frequently on financial support, in some ways this makes things full circle. It helps students who are thinking about making the investment for law school that don't have that tuition readily available to make their dreams just a little bit more attainable. That's what we're trying to do.
In reading about the award and reading a bit about you guys, it strikes me that it is inspired by some of your own experiences. And can you elaborate a little bit on what being an immigrant to Vancouver, being the first in your family to go to law school, how your experience of law school may be different from some of your classmates and how that inspired you to want to give back in this way?
Yeah, for sure. So ever since I wanted to become a lawyer in high school, actually grade 8, I didn't actually know any real life lawyers. Like the lawyers I saw were on TV. I saw Judge Judy a lot, which is a judge, but another like TV legal drama shows. And my immigrant parents obviously certainly didn't have the connections or the means to access any professionals. And my first encounter with a real life lawyer was in my 1L wine and cheese event. And I can assure you that I was one very awkward turtle leading the room because I don't think liberal arts graduates generally get the opportunity to be in networking space, unlike like Sauder or business school graduates, right? They don't get the practice in networking or talking to people. So it sounds really silly, but it's true. I've never met a lawyer until then. So I really didn't know how to talk to one. Like, what should I talk about? Like you know, should I discuss cases or, you know, things like that. So I compared my experience with some of my classmates whose dad is a judge or mom is a partner in a national law firm or uncle is a prosecutor. So law and legal career are more of a natural dinner time conversations. And I don't think people who have access to those connections, which is a privilege, necessarily realize it, but those connections and insights into the legal world are really valuable things that many people like can't get access to. So many visible minority POC law students that we know are the first in their families to pursue law, and often from immigrant families with limited resources and connections, and the type of connections that could really help propel their children's careers in a professional world. But I'm not talking about like the type of connections about helping your kids land a job in a law firm, but more of a subtle and their everyday exposure, like being a role model. So I'm a lawyer, so you can aspire to be one. I'm a judge, you can aspire to be one, that type. Or connecting them to the right people at the right time if they want to talk about more things or pursue their interests in like a specific type of law, that sort of connection. So it's very difficult to aspire to be something, I think, if you haven't seen enough of that something, like a visible minority judge in Canada. So we really want this award to go to a student who have like a similar experience as us. And our hope is that we can continue to build a network for students and mentor them, like the network that our immigrant parents never had.
Obviously, law school is expensive, so the benefit of an award is obvious in that sense. But it seems to me that at the school's level, offering an award like this is also an acknowledgement that certain people do face additional challenges and additional difficulties. And offering that award really acknowledges that that's taking place and seeks to make an effort to make room for those people and accommodate them. in ways that are helpful. What do you think the significance is for people who are trying to go to law school of having at an institutional level that acknowledgement that they might be facing something different from many other students?
Yeah, I won't speak for all persons of color, but in sharing my experience, I was consistently on financial aid, whether in the form of a scholarship or a bursary throughout my education. I think that most first-generation people of color have a similar background where their families come to Canada doing whatever two, three, or four jobs are needed to make ends meet. This is not a scenario where a student can invest in first-year law school tuition and decide it's not their cup of tea and just bounce. The stakes are often much higher. So what we find in our communities is that the people who want to go to law school earnestly want to be lawyers. And if it brings honor to their family, fantastic, but they certainly value the opportunity. And then going beyond that, I think the cost of education, while it's an investment, and you've spoken about that, Daria, about perhaps serving as a little bit of a barrier to entry into the profession, but it can also very much influence career choices. For people of color, where their families were brought up in such a way that the children knew that their parents sacrificed everything to come to this new country, and essentially that they were their parents' largest, most valuable investment. There is an extreme pressure for them to perform, an extreme pressure for them to find jobs that are high paying enough to wipe off that student debt as soon as possible, and maybe even take care of their parents down the road. And the unfortunate byproduct, however, is that sometimes students chase positions in firms that don't really align with their interests, and they consign themselves to these high pressure jobs with limited personal satisfaction. And what's sad is that they can't really share this with their family members because they don't want to unload that guilt or burden on them. I can think of so many friends who have said, I'll make bank for 2 years. You know, the steady cycle of don't eat, don't sleep, and we'll repeat this just to make back the loan, set up my parents, and then maybe I'll go into special interest law or something that really, really I'm interested in. So Marie and I are thinking, if we can ease the pressure a bit for these students who are considering law school, but for whom tuition might be a little bit of a stretch, or giving them some financial support to pursue their true legal interests, we can begin to kind of level the playing field here.
Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about what the process of setting an award like this up is actually like? So you decide that you want to do it. Who do you approach? Who did you get help from at the school? And so on.
Yeah, so we're lucky because charities has always been an interest to me, and it's been a part of my practice since the beginning. So we kind of cheated in that sense. We skipped a few steps. I'm also the director on the Canadian Association of Gift Planners, BC Chapter, which is an organization that largely builds a network between charities. So I'm in a very familiar space here, and having assisted clients in setting up their own foundations before. So in terms of how it worked out, I reached out to one of my mentors, Didi Sung, who is formerly with UBC Development, with the idea. And with the help of her colleagues, Stephanie Wright, and our dear friend, Jenny Park, who happens to be one of Maria's close friends personally, we outlined our vision for the award. We drafted the terms of the endowment trust agreement, and then we coordinated funding dates. They made it extremely easy for us.
Yeah, and I've also reached out to my personal mentor, Shirley Nakata, who is ombudsperson for students at UBC, and Jen Lau, the acting assistant dean of students at Allard, for their requirement of refinement of the POC criteria. They were very helpful.
So I know we've talked a little bit about both of your experiences somewhat individually, but obviously there's been some overlap, and you guys share some of the same experiences and some of the challenges in your lives. And I wonder how your relationship to each other has kind of shaped your perspectives about some of these things.
One dirty.
For the better. So yes, it's true that we have shared many milestones together, like from toiling through law school exam times, graduating together, articling, getting called to the bar, etc. And I think through those experiences, you have come to be a lot more open and understanding of each other, being from different cultural backgrounds, obviously, and the demands of our career. So when we tell people who we first met that we're both lawyers, they automatically, I don't know why, assume that we are going to fight all the time. We must argue all the time, but that is not true. We're both very conflict-averse people. And it's just a fun fact, but when we actually need to have a bigger argument, we actually tend to fight in writing. So we both sit down, compose ourselves and our thoughts, and then we go back and edit things that don't make sense. And it's like, oh, what would the judge think? And then we just type this out and then like delete, edit, and then send. So it sounds nerdy maybe, but that's how we do things.
throughout my, you know, my working and studying abroad stints, Maria has always been encouraging me to find the proper starting place for my career. I can't tell you just how supportive she's been. I can also tell you that I was super annoying every time I came back from Asia and would rave about how awesome the experience was and how much it felt like home with the similar food to having afternoon tea time snacks with colleagues, which was a thing that I clearly miss here in Vancouver. And then long distance dating, and as Maria said, interracial dating has made us more patient, yes, more open-minded, and more aware of our implicit biases. You know, we both speak at least three languages, but our only common language is English. So it's crazy. We ironically experience what we imagine most Caucasian Canadians go through when they date someone of a different culture and they have to go over for family dinner. The broken sentences, the guessing words from out of context, you know, the awkward bowing and frantic hand motions. But you know what? To this end, Ariel, I think when we listen to our clients as a result, we're so used to putting ourselves in the shoes of the outsider. In this case, the clients who are outsiders to the legal fluencies that we have in the system, the societal norms and how to fill out forms. We're so comfortable guessing their intentions from words that are not said, from words that they're misusing completely, and also from frantic hand actions. So I think we're better for it.
You mentioned that in your previous answer that you both speak multiple languages. I know, for example, for Nico, that was really helpful for you during your time at Fasken, for example, and it strikes me that that's a very clear example of how diversity can make the practice of law better generally. And I wonder if you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think at the heart of law is the ability to advocate and communicate effectively with people from all walks of life. You're never going to have control over who all your clients are and who's going to need your help. I think language is the conduit for this. So the ability to speak different languages, which in turn often have their own cultural norms silently embedded in those words, can build a level of trust and understanding immediately with clients and counterparties if you're negotiating right away. I want to share a story. My time at the law firms in Singapore and Malaysia, which are multicultural countries with large Indian, Chinese, and Muslim populations, exposed me to how barristers or litigators would use different language or turns of phrases in court, or accents or personalities, depending on the ethnicity of the judge or the witnesses that day. I'll never forget how a senior lawyer would snap in and out of different personalities as he would explain himself to a Malaysian judge in Malay. He would instruct me in Chinese, and he would clarify himself to an Indian witness in a mix of old British English and Indian slang. He turned to me at the end of the day and said, "Nico, at the end of the day, it's about being understood so that we can get to an understanding." And I think that was super powerful. I've made some of my best friends working in Asia or the working culture and just a sense of belonging to the majority demographic really highlights the difference between what the person of color experience in the legal community here in Vancouver is like, where we are the severely minority demographic. So to the question of diversity, I think to the extent that we can have more people who understand each other, who have the capacity and the patience to learn more about each other's differences, not just to see the differences, but to actually highlight the similarities. This is the path forward. And it's our hope that the profession, you know, whether, as Maria was saying, starting at the top judicial level, to the firm partnership level, and even beginning at the admissions process of the law school, that we demonstrate our efforts to make the profession more representative and that we all can kind of speak that same language.
I know you've both held a number of positions related to civil rights and social action, including the Federation of Asian Canadian Lawyers and the West Coast Domestic Workers Association. Can you tell me a bit about what inspired your involvement with these kinds of roles and what you were able to take away from them?
So I was one of the founding members of the Federation of Asian Canadian Lawyers, BC, or we call it BC, in my second year at Allard, actually. It got started along with other alums, Jen Lau, Serene Chow, were one of the first presidents. And the motivation behind establishing this organization was really create a network or safe space for Asian law students and legal professionals to gather together and discuss the unique challenges that we face in the legal world. So after our first few meetings, we had many lawyers who came forth, junior and senior, saying that, oh, why didn't this organization exist when they're going through the system? Wish it was there so they could like get more help from it. And the law students who joined FACL said that they finally have a place that they belong, that where they can just be themselves and create a path forward. So from talking to many lawyers and students throughout my involvement in the organization, it's pretty clear that discrimination, subconscious and systemic bias still exists for any POCs. In because its legal world is it's still pretty much predominantly Caucasian field. That's just fact. Law firms and legal workplaces. So, and that POCs are in the most vulnerable category of being students or junior lawyers, and not many making it to the upper level leadership positions where their voice could be heard. So I'm not on the board of ACO anymore after my 7 years there, but I know it's still working very hard to push the diversity agenda forward, or like advocating for digital diversity and engaging in diversity and inclusiveness conversation with many national law firms, and also running mentorship program, which is a huge, huge thing for law students and junior lawyers.
And then West Coast Domestic Workers is now called Migrant Workers Center of BC. It has a special place in my heart because I joined actually as an Access Pro Bono student in 1L and then sat on the board for several years and am now just a senior manager there, but on the governance committee. But the reason it has a special place in my heart is because a large population of BC and the world in general, the migrant workers had Filipino roots, like where I'm from. In Vancouver, we see that most often, nurses, caregivers, hospitality industry, the agricultural workers and construction workers. In fact, about $31 billion of the Philippine national GDP, about 10%, comes from wages sent back from overseas workers from places like Canada. So it's a huge portion of our culture to just help others. And what that means is that they leave their family temporarily to enter Canada to provide us with valuable services to improve, you know, our standard day-to-day living and our standards of life. So, I mean, as an immigrant myself and having worked abroad, I can certainly relate to the majority of them having family overseas. That particular wave of loneliness that comes during holidays and you're by yourself, the attempts to navigate a new legal and social system. So West Coast for me was that perfect opportunity to use my legal skills and the common knowledge, cultural heritage to provide additional support and comfort to these individuals. And from this experience, if I had to just give you a story, I saw how even filling out immigration documents was super challenging for non-native English speakers. Translation services are helpful, yes, but I think the true value was the ability to draw as a Filipino to Filipino from our shared culture to provide the caregivers the words to put in their applications to more fully and compellingly express their cases, which they really wouldn't have thought of saying. I mean, I doubt the depth of the conversations that we had would be the same if that individual was in front of a traditional Caucasian lawyer, because they wouldn't have that knowledge or comfort to tease out those relevant details in those discovery conversations. So an extra special twist, I think, when you share a little bit in common.
I think this award and the conversation between us today is kind of set against the backdrop of a pretty heightened dialogue and some outrage about issues of racism that started with incidents in the United States, but have led to displays of solidarity in other places around the world, and some introspection, I think, in other places around the world, including Canada. And I think that this award and such a major law school being part of it, I think kind of speaks to that inevitably. And I was wondering what message in all of what's going on you would like this to send.
We certainly didn't expect the award to be introduced as such a timely intersection of the values that we personally hold being expressed at the forefront of the media. But the Allard support of this award really signals that it shares in our values of diversity and inclusion. And I hope its existence will inspire many similar initiatives on campus, not just Allard.
You've both spoken at length at this point about some of the challenges that people of color might face in going to law school, whether that's financial barriers or not knowing any lawyers and not knowing what the field is really like, and so on and so forth. For any people out there who are people of color and facing these challenges or considering about going to law school or are currently in law school and are feeling intimidated or afraid of some of these aspects, what would you say to them?
That you belong. You are worthy. You do not need permission to apply. You don't need to ask for permission to do your best or to speak up. you should not feel afraid to try and thrive. You do you, and that's all we can ask for. I mean, but that being said, it would be remiss for us not to mention that you got to come with the expectation of working hard, if not doubly hard, in comparison to some of your peers. Maria touched on it before, law school, getting jobs, getting promotions. These are all social constructs, meaning that social interactions, existing social networks and communities matter. And so for people of color, we have a lot of catching up to do in terms of being able to rely on that same network of family, friends, and contacts who happen to be influential members of the legal community. So do not hesitate to reach out to those of us, people of color, who have made it in the legal community. We're here. We will certainly remember what it was like when we were uncertain years ago. And we certainly will owe it back to the lawyers who took us out for coffee years ago and kind of before to continue that tradition of doing what we can to leave our community and the next generation of lawyers in a better, kind of more inclusive state than when we entered it. So reach out. We're friendly.
Nico and Maria, thank you so much for joining me again.
Okay. Most welcome. Happy to be here.